Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and I'm bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of an old friend. His name is Nick Begich, and, of course, Nick, we've talked to many times in the past about HAARP. And, of course, about the High Altitude Auroral Research Project. But Nick has continued working, trying to educate people about what's going on there in Alaska where he lives. And, certainly has some fascinating information for us about what's transpiring today in one of the most significant states in our nation. And yet, of course, they are coming under so much of this Agenda 21 regulation and in the name of environmentalism, of course, are trying to prevent development. I mean, the government owns most of Alaska, and of course, there's fabulous wealth there and minerals and oil. Some of the largest oil deposits in the world are off the North Slope of Alaska, and they've certainly been kept off the market for the last 40 years. So that we could justify sending massive amounts of American money to other countries and having a negative balance of payments. It's totally unnecessary. America has been blessed with fabulous natural resources, which we've not been allowed to develop. Nick Begich, you pick up the story from there. It's good to have you with us.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. You know, when you think back, Alaska is one of the newest states as well. You know, 1959 came into the Union and represents actually 20%, and just a little under 20% of the entire landmass of the United States. And then if you look at the coastline of Alaska, because of just the size and the way our islands stretch out into the Pacific, we have actually coastline longer than the West Coast, East Coast, and Gulf Coast combined. And then when you consider the continental shelf and the outer limits of that, of what that represents in terms of potential oil basins, gas basins, and not just the oil and gas, which most people are familiar with in Alaska, but we actually have 32 of the 33 strategic minerals, the minerals that during the back in the 70s, during the Carter administration, they determined were absolutely critical for national defense and really the stability and security of the nation. And we have them here in Alaska. Tremendous resources. Coal, which is a bad word, I guess, in a lot of places. Alaska has coal reserves on the surface, things that have been isolated, recognized, enough for domestic energy that they say for perhaps 2,000 years. Half of the coal discovered and known in the world is thought to be potentially in Alaska.
A fabulously wealthy nation, and yet, of course, so much of this has been prevented, has not been developed, because there's been an organized, orchestrated effort to keep the development of these products, to keep them off the market.
Yeah.
So we could justify sending massive amounts of money to our good friends in communist China to build up this ruthless tyranny there. It is a ruthless, tyrannical country. And yet, of course, we're doing everything. Our leaders are doing everything they can to, of course, to build up communist China, to honor the mass murderers who lead that country. We're so concerned about Assad, who's the dictator in Syria. But isn't it strange we're not concerned about the ruthless, tyrannical dictators in China who've killed hundreds or at least 100 million people, if not more? But we never talk about that. Why is that? Well, of course, you have to understand why, if people understood this, why we would not be continuing sending our money over there, not continue developing their resources and suppressing the natural resources available there in Alaska. We'll be back in just a moment with our good friend, Nick Begich. Nick, you go right ahead. Nick, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, you know, the entire situation here in Alaska is really not well understood. And I, you know, we're a pretty isolated place from the rest of the country, but it's not just what's in place here in terms of mineral wealth. It's the quality of the deposits, the fact that it is a relatively, you know, when you consider as a developmental environment, you know, the U.S. could be and should be quite appealing, not just to multinational companies, but domestic companies, most importantly, because what we have here, you know, is on the scale of world-class minerals, even above the Arctic Circle. We have, and many don't know this, we have one of the largest zinc mines in the world, at one point producing 6% of the concentrate, zinc concentrates in the world were coming out of a mine in the Nome area, which is above the Arctic Circle. In fact, they can only ship 6-7 months a year because the ports are frozen. You know, literally frozen solid. You can't even ship the concentrates out. When you talk about the environmental issues, that particular area, the natural situation in that area was there were no fish in the streams because the natural acid leaching that took place just from the minerals in place didn't allow it. And since the mine's been operating there now over 20 years, they've actually brought fish back into those very streams that nature didn't even allow fish to grow. The fact is the environmental community has stood in the way of numerous mines. So one of the 10 top silver mines is in the southeastern part of the state, got started a number of years ago, Greens Creek, still operating there, and presently one of the biggest potential gold and molybdenum mines, world-class, again, a deposit thought to contain nearly a trillion, with a T, trillion dollars in mineral resources, is a pebble deposit, which is now a huge controversy here, you know, here in Alaska, and has been for some time. But there's probably 20 world-class mining projects on the drawing boards in Alaska right now. Unfortunately, most of them are being developed by multinational organizations that aren't necessarily domiciled in the United States, because this is one of the most favorable environments. The problem with environmentalists right now is Alaska's become sort of the poster child for fundraising efforts for every environmental group in the country. I mean, anytime something happens here, the crawl goes out and it's used to really slow projects or delay projects here in Alaska.
Nick, I want you to hold that thought, and we'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Nick is talking about some of the biggest mines, silver mines, gold mines in the world, and so many of the zinc mines, so many of the mines, certainly the major mineral deposits there in Alaska. The development is being delayed by the environmental movement. Who controls the environmental movement? It's all created and financed by what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. And believe me, of course, when one of these major corporations really wants to get something through, why, of course, they give the orders and then the environmentalists quit campaigning against it. But this is all staged. Certainly nobody else will ever be allowed to develop any of these mineral deposits other than those who go along with the Brotherhood of Darkness, because they control the environmental movement. And until you understand, somebody has to put up the money for the environmental movement. Somebody has to simply provide the arguments for the environmental movement. Somebody has to, of course, to bribe the judges in many instances, so they will certainly let the environmental movement certainly block issues, or certainly if it's something that's very important that the establishment wants, of course the judge will be paid off, and he will certainly let the people, great corporations, develop things. So go right ahead, Dick. Unfortunately, we do not have a fair system at all. We have people of great wealth who are able to manipulate the system to their advantage, and for the little guy comes along and wants, of course, to develop natural resources there, he's going to run into a brick wall. But go right ahead.
Yeah, you know, the there's a couple other issues that are, again, important for people to get an understanding of what's happened here. If you look at a just a road map or a railroad map or an infrastructure map of Alaska, if you will, you'll discover real quickly that there virtually isn't any. In fact, we don't even link up to the rail system through Canada, which have been, incidentally, in Western Canada, pushed further and further north every year as they've continued to open up and develop their mineral resources of Western Canada all the way up, getting closer and closer to the Alaskan border. And if we ever linked our rail, the rail in Alaska that does exist here, into the mineral belts throughout the state and then up to the Canadian linkages and then down into the states, we could actually transport for value-added purposes tremendous resources into the central parts of the United States. No infrastructure exists today. In fact, one of the most important pipelines for at least creating North American oil transit was nixed by the Obama administration. It was bringing oils and gas out of Canada. Hey, Canadians are so angry, they're now shipping it directly to China because at least they they pay and don't get in the way. And that's exactly what is happening. In fact, a lot of Alaska's resources are actually being exported primarily into Southeast Asia because there is no transportation corridors.
But I think it's so important, Nick, that people understand it's because our leaders are working hand in glove with the Chinese communists to discourage the development of our resources and send those resources to China. We're doing everything we can to build up the economy and the mineral wealth and the military status of communist China as they do everything they can to destroy ours. People don't understand unless you go back and study the fall of China, the nationalist Chinese, what happened at the end of the Second World War, is that it was the American State Department that brought the communist regime to power. Recently, of course, we had a gentleman named Mr. Hu, who was the premier of China, come to the United States. Who is Mr. Hu? Who is who? Why, he was the man responsible for the murder at the time of the Tiananmen Square. He killed tens of thousands of people. He was a mass murderer. And yet, of course, when he came to America recently, he was lauded and applauded, and nobody in the controlled media ever mentioned that this Mr. Hu, who at that time was the premier of China, was the mass murderer of Tiananmen Square. Go right ahead.
And you know, that's exactly it, is so much of the potential, the possibilities within the country have been really traded off for other people's interests. And this is, again, I agree with you, Dr. Stan, the idea of deferring our interest to the developing world, China in particular, has been exactly what has happened. And at a time when we could be developing, should be developing, domestic resources that would at least add opportunity for value added, because we've got huge market advantage. You know, here, again in Alaska, you know, the stranglehold of the Chinese on the U.S. industry for rare earth minerals, because what they don't produce in China in rare earth minerals, they lock up in other countries. Well, Alaska has a number of prospects throughout the state for rare earth minerals that could create independence for the United States and minerals that are absolutely vital for all of our strategic industries and all of the leading edge industries, from solar to alternate energy, all of it. And, you know, Alaska, I'm standing in a place right now looking out over an area that I can look as far as I can see, and I don't see another resident. I live in a fairly remote part of the state, and yet when I think about just what has come into play here, you know, you go back historically, going back to the very beginnings of our statehood, it started with natural resources. First it was the Russians looking for furs, and then we bought the Seward's Folly, is what they used to call it. They thought it was such a bad deal until they discovered gold, copper, and other minerals, starting the gold rush everyone remembers. And from there, then, oil and gas and tremendous wealth. In fact, when you look at all natural resources, fisheries included, you know, Alaska, with what we do have here, are also the largest natural fishing stocks left in the world. Huge fishing resources. Again, a major source of export for Alaska, but again, an industry that is little understood by most of the people in the rest of the United States. Great opportunities here, and yet being totally missed. And those opportunities are being exploited, again, by multinational companies, taking full advantage of what is here, not necessarily for our value-added benefit, but just to take it, to extract it. When and the primary driver for that is no infrastructure. We're building roads in some instances in Alaska to nowhere when we really need roads to minerals and roads to possibilities. When you think about the entire Western development of the United States was based on raw minerals being developed and then added value through the Midwest factories and then eventually export. And today, really, modern factories offer that same opportunity because the amount of labor required and the kind of labor required is the very kind of labor the United States is famous for. Smart, innovative, hardworking, technically capable tradesmen and women and professionals. And as a consequence, what we really have is a lack of leadership and really a partnership between business and politics that has corrupted the entire set of possibilities for a few short-term gains and huge national losses that we've all witnessed in our lifetime.
I agree with you, Nick. And the thing is that the average American really doesn't understand really the tremendous wealth that's up there in Alaska, and how the federal government, and I don't know about the state government, but I know the federal government has done everything in many instances to block its development.
Yeah.
What did you think of Sarah Palin when she was the governor? Was she a good governor or not?
You know, I wish she had finished her term here, you know, because the thing that she was doing was really trying to get the multinational oil industry here to be a little more honest. There was during huge oil and gas scandals. She had a pretty good reputation in the middle of all that. Unfortunately, she chose a different route. And a lot of us here in Alaska, I included, felt that she really abandoned her responsibilities by going to the national scene when really some unfinished business in the national interest.
Well, of course, she was getting sued. I mean, she was getting lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit, which she had to defend with her own money, and the money wasn't coming in to help her.
That's the reason
she dropped out.
I
don't really blame her. They targeted her. They were going to crush her. They did crush her. She had millions of dollars of lawsuits, and they would have continued. And that's why she had to drop out. And I feel very sorry for her, but I think that Sydney, anyway, go ahead.
And what she did get done was more effective than anything that's happened here in oil, progressive oil taxation in quite a long time. Because here in Alaska and in most of the western states, energy resources are withheld to the government. In other words, those underlying resources are owned by governments, which means essentially we own them. The problem is, they were giving them away at fire sale prices, and Palin was the first person, the first governor in a very long time to stand up and say, hey, wait a minute. You know, there's a question of equity here. These leases were let when oil was $3 and $4 a barrel. It's $100 a barrel now, and it's a little bit upside down on the equation, especially on new fields that were coming into production. So she was pretty progressive, you know, from the standpoint of really looking at, is the public's interest being best served in the way in which mineral allocations, in this case oil and gas, were being handled in the state? On the side of the industry, you know, the industry has had huge opportunities here. That's why they're here. But their perspective is, and what has happened here, is essentially they blackmailed the state of Alaska in exchange for lower and lower and lower tax rates, so they won't invest any money here. And they have no production requirements on these older leased fields. Now, the new fields, we got a little smarter, so we require them to actually put some money up in terms of development, but we didn't have those requirements. So a lot of these very large tracts of oil and gas have been locked up. In fact, the land lockup began long ago. When we became a state, our deal with the federal government in Alaska was 90% of all rents and royalties under federal land would return to the state of Alaska. What happened after statehood, and we gave up a big portion of our surface estate, our claims for surface rights here in Alaska, and ceded that to the federal government in exchange for those underlying resources. And we were told in the 1980s by the U.S. Supreme Court that the Statehood Act could be changed at will when the Congress allocated 50% of the natural resources under the National Naval Petroleum Reserve to the United States.
Hold that thought. Once again, they lied to you just like they lied to the doctors to get into socialized medicine. Nick, you go right ahead. So basically, in other words, they told you one thing, they did another. Is that it?
That's right. In fact, the Statehood Act has no force of law in the long term. In fact, it's less effective than an international treaty. Quite in fact, can be changed by any successor Congress, which is pretty disturbing, you know, because statehood, you know, when statehood happened here, you know, we were supposed to have been given the option of statehood, yes or no, maintain our existence as a territory or even independence. We weren't given those options. We were essentially annexed into the United States through a limited choice election in violation of what we had signed on in international law. Whether people like those international laws or not, you know, in Alaska, some of us were pretty offended by the way in which it happened because we didn't have a fair and full vote. In fact, military occupiers here were given cash bonuses for voting that day along with their dependents and spouses, while those that couldn't speak or read or write English, which was a significant portion of the indigenous population in the 1950s, didn't have the same opportunity necessarily to vote. So, you know, when you look at the whole thing, we got a deal that's not a deal at all. It's as good as a Native American treaty. It's not worth the paper it's printed on. And the states' rights were usurped first by conspiring to get our surface estate and mineral rights, and then cheating us out of what they agreed to in the course of that negotiations and what they sold the public in Alaska. Now, later, what happened is my dad was in the Congress in the 70s. He passed the Native Land Claims Settlement Act, which was the largest, most important Native Land Claims Act in the history of the United States. It sent and gave 44 million acres back to indigenous Alaskans with a priority selection. They got to select from all federal lands at that time that weren't already appropriated to private use, which was only 1% of Alaska at the time. And they got to do a priority based on not just surface estate, but they own the timber rights, mineral rights, etc. That did pass Congress, got signed into law by Richard Nixon, and that cleared the title discrepancies that had emerged from statehood regarding indigenous titles to clear the way for the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Corridor and subsequent pipeline to be built. Now, that pipeline was designed and used to carry 2.2 million barrels of oil a day. It's carrying less than 600,000 barrels of oil a day, not for a lack of oil to stick in it, but a lack of will of the pipeline companies and the oil producers on the North Slope to do it. They've been blackmailing the state, leveraging their third world developments against U.S. tax laws to just slowly and gradually increment their way down as they blackmail the United States entering into their developmental strategy, which is to pay the public as little as possible and pay their international bankers and shareholders as much as they can. And, you know, I understand all that. I mean, that is a free market system, the way it operates. But, again, we're dealing with public resource when we're talking about much of the oil and gas in Alaska. After the Native Land Claims, in the course of that settlement, there was then a Section D-2 put in the Claims Act, which opened the door for what they called national interest lands. And for those that understand what the Constitution has in national interest lands, it was post offices and military institutions. Well, in Alaska, it was 104 million acres of taking when they locked up in national parks and preserves some of the greatest mineral deposits known in the Western world. And why? And who supported it? Just like you said, Dr. Stan, it was a rich cabal of industrialists funding environmental movement, the environmental movement going, gee, why is the Rockefeller Foundation, some of these other guys all funding us?
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Instead of niggers talking about just the inequality up there and how suddenly some very wealthy people have been able to exploit the system with the help of the federal government. And, of course, they made agreements. They made promises to the people of Alaska when Alaska entered the United States. And then, of course, they went back on what they said. In other words, they simply lied to the people. I saw this as a practicing physician. I remember 1965, I said, look, Medicare is not going to work. There's no way you can possibly finance this thing over, you know, a period of 50 years. It's going to fall apart. They said, look, you've got nothing to worry about. We will pay you your usual and customary fee. We'll pay the hospitals their usual and customary fee. We can very easily finance this. It's actuarially solid. You know, it's going to be solid for 100 years. You can trust us. And so the doctors foolishly trust the government. And basically, the government did exactly what they said they would do. They gave the doctors usual and customary fees. They gave the hospitals usual and customary fees. And it was the most wonderful system for a time. The only trouble is they never said how long they were going to give usual and customary fees and how long they were going to be able to pay the hospital bills. And then, of course, they began to, first with the hospitals, cutting back and cutting back and cutting back and cutting back till now, of course, the majority of the expenses of Medicare patients is borne by the private industries and by the private hospitalization. Now they're cutting back on the fees of doctors. They're making relatively little in comparison to what they used to before. In fact, the doctors are making less for a hip arthroplasty today than far less than when I was doing hip arthroplasties 20 years ago. The government lies, and they lied, of course, to the people there in Alaska in a similar manner. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and we have Jack in Michigan asking about Alaska's natural gas. Jack, do you have a question for our guest?
I do, Dr. Sam, thank you. You know, one of your periodic guests has stated that billions of cubic feet of natural gas are pumped back into the ground with jet engines along the Alaska pipeline, and I'm thinking, gosh, being that Nick is from Alaska.
Let's ask Nick about that. Basically, we understood that initially, when they were getting their oil out from Sydney on the North Slope, they had no means of moving the natural gas, and they were just pumping it back into the ground. Do you know anything about that,
right,
Nick?
That's exactly what they did, and for two reasons. The old days, they used to just flare it or burn it off like waste, and we didn't allow that. I mean, we put in some pretty stringent requirements, but it turned out to be to the benefit of the industry, because by pushing the natural gas back underground on the North Slope at the time, it continued to pressurize the field and liberate more gas at depth, oil at depth, and bringing the oil out was their priority. The fact is, you can run gas in the same pipeline, in at least in some form, and take it out the other end, some liquefied gas. They've been able to do that, but there is no gas line. We've been trying to get a gas line out of Alaska for the last 30 years. And it's, again, the industry has blackmailed this state, has twisted the arm of the federal government, has given every excuse in the world for not doing it, and locked up trillions and trillions of cubic feet of natural gas that should have been built into the infrastructure of this state and into the country. We should be in totally independent in energy. You know, we have also, as I mentioned, coal resources. There are now coal to liquid technologies. I looked at these. These were developed by ExxonMobil and others that will take one dry ton of coal and convert it to 5.5 barrels of refined petroleum products using stripping out the hydrocarbons.
Well, let's let Eric. Eric, did you have something else you wanted to say?
Nick, is there no way in Alaska to generate Alaska patriotism in the Alaskan people to whether it takes boycotting some kind of a movement to
I think that's what Nick is one reason he's here on our program tonight. Go ahead, Nick. What was your thought?
You bet.
What can be done?
Going back to Sarah Palin again, you know, she had offered a gas line built here, and there are companies that have looked at it. But again, they couldn't get a commitment from the suppliers on the North Slope to give them the gas. And consequently, you know, it's the cat and mouse game. They've got the gas, but they don't want to finance the pipeline. The finance of the pipeline can't finance without a commitment for the gas. And that's where the regulators need to put pressure to make sure these resources come into production in the national interest, all of our interests across the country.
And I think, Eric, what you have to understand is that they keep talking about, oh, how we've got to develop all these natural resources. We have plenty of natural resources. They won't let them develop it because they want to transfer our wealth to other countries.
That's right.
And they're doing a great job. We'll be back in just a moment here. Okay, Eric, anything else you wanted to say?
I'm going to tell Nick, I'm going to move to Alaska, and I'm going to, with your assistance, run for governor on that platform and a few other patriotic platforms. How about that?
All right, fine. Thanks very much, Eric. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I fear the case if anybody went up there and tried to do the right thing to represent the people and the best interests of the United States, they would, of course, have run into the same problem Sarah Palin did, and that is massive lawsuits, suit after suit after suit, aimed at crushing anybody who tries to do what's best for the people. Go ahead.
Yeah, it is the case. In fact, at one point, we actually had what we called public interest litigants, where you could actually file suit as an individual to take on issues and at least get the judiciary to review it. And these allowed citizens like you and me. In fact, I was part of a lawsuit when British Petroleum was thinking about buying up ARCO, Atlantic Richfield, which would have given them virtual stranglehold and a monopoly of domestic oil on the North Slope. It was myself and two other gentlemen, Vic Fisher, one of the signers of our state constitution, a prominent Democrat here. I was an Alaskan Independence Party member at the time. And then we also had the chairman of the Republican Moderates here, which was an independent party in Alaska. We filed the first antitrust suit to block that until three western states, Washington, Oregon, and California, hired their own antitrust lawyers to do the same thing. Because in two hearings here in Alaska, two Senate and legislative hearings, where both sets of consultants hired by the legislature recommended suing, our legislature didn't have the cojones to take on the oil industry because they were all being paid by them in form of campaign contribution or even direct bribery, which a number of them went to prison a few years later for. But the point is, in order to make things accountable here, the corruption, we're like a third world country up here at one point in time. You know, a lot of that got cleaned up. But I can tell you, Alaska, it's not just what's in our interest here as Americans, as Alaskans, but when we think about what we offer to the rest of the country and possibility. And I think that's what we're missing in terms of the election. We're all hearing about lowering taxes, lowering this, doing that, trying to bring industry back. We got industry right here. We haven't even moved yet. We just got to open it back up. And that requires a different review of our infrastructure strategies in the country and how Alaska might play a bigger role in that.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Nick Begets, an old friend of ours who we've interviewed many times on the HARP program, the High Altitude of Rural Research Project. And of course, we have a four-tape set on HARP, and you can actually hear what Nick was saying 10 years about the program that they had. Now, our telephone number, if you have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. They have fantastic amounts of some things up there. It's in the way of lumber, in the way of fishing, way of oil and natural resources, and certainly the oil and natural resources are being intensely blocked by the international conglomerates that have a different rule. They're involved in something called creative destruction, and the last thing they want to do is develop, of course, the natural resources of America. They want to transfer our wealth to other nations. They're doing a great job. on. But they don't let the American people know what's really going on, so they have to conceal what they're doing under the guise, oh, it's environmentalism, and we're trying to protect the earth, and we're trying to protect Gaia, and they have all of these explanations, and none of them are real. The whole environmental movement is a scam. There are problems with the environment, but many times the major corporations will actually create the pollution intentionally so they can justify ever more power control, but it's really all about Agenda 21, changing the structure of the society of the world and bringing about this new one-world government. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. And his guest is Nick Begich. Nick, how can people get in touch with you, get to your website, to get your information?
Sure. My website is www.earthpulse, EARTHPULSE, earthpulse.com. Or you can dial a toll-free number, get information on some of our books at 888-690-9111.
All right. Well, basically, what are you doing at the present time? What is the solution up there? I don't think you're going to get Sarah Palin back as the governor. How are you ever going to get anybody in there who'll be honest and will be able to accomplish what needs to be done to protect the people, to perfect the environment? Because anybody who came in and tried to do the right thing, they would set out to crush.
Well, you know, it's interesting. As I'd mentioned, my dad was involved in politics here. My younger brother, Mark, actually is a seated U.S. senator right now from Alaska. He's in D.C. He's in his fourth year down there. And he's one of the few pro-gun and pro-development Democrats in the U.S. Senate, which is important, I think, because that perspective, certainly the developmental perspective, most Democrats don't share from other parts of the country. Westerners understand, these issues a little bit better. Alaskans certainly do. And we also have Lisa Murkowski, Republican U.S. Senator, who's been down there long enough now. And with someone on both sides of the aisles representing Alaska, at least we have the story being told maybe a little bit better than it's been told before. In fact, one of the companies doing offshore development in the Chukchi Sea, which potentially has 20 billion barrels of untapped oil and trillions of cubic feet of natural gas, has been hung up for years in the permitting process, finally got, with the help of both senators and Don Young, our U.S. congressman, got their permits moving along and got them up there doing some seismic work and some drilling. And the fact is, that's what it is going to take, a different perspective and someone with the courage and the leadership to start to move these issues forward. At the same time, the recognition on how absolutely critical, I mean, think about trillions of cubic feet of natural gas and billions of barrels of untapped oil resources, energy resources. If we could just turn off energy imports, and we're headed there because of the fracking and oil shales that are being developed throughout the United States, and what that also offers in Alaska is just a tremendous resource again. But when you add all of that up, the energy resources, we can be absolutely independent, which is 21st century freedom. It's as important as food production. And that's another area where Alaska has huge potential. Some of the greatest mapped and understood agricultural lands. You know, back when I was doing the work on HAARP, one of the technologies that HAARP had in its quiver of things was earth-penetrating tomography, which is the idea of looking into the earth several kilometers deep for underground shelters and facilities and oil and gas fields and mineral deposits of all sorts. And the accuracy and efficiency of these deep scanning instruments now is pretty profound. In fact, many will remember a few years ago we had a ship orbiting, a device orbiting Mars, and we were detecting water at so many kilometers and distinguishing water from other types of materials. From space, we weren't even on the ground, for goodness sake. And what we can do in terms of taking sort of the national inventory is applying our technologies at NASA and our technologies held throughout the country to fully mapping and understanding the resources of the nation, which is our national wealth, ladies and gentlemen. That is what we own in common. That is our sort of underlying deposit, our capital, if you will, that has totally built this country over 200 years and needs to be recognized and inventoried, and a reasonable amount of return generated for the American public when we allow multinationals and others to exploit it. You know, you go back to copper here. It was Kennecott, which was a Guggenheim family operation here that controlled most of the copper for World War One and World War Two, financed by Morgan Trust, that shut out other potential mineral deposits in Alaska that would actually flood supply onto the market at the time, breaking their monopolies. And those strategies have just changed in sophistication by the overt buying of legislature through what most people would conceive as bribery, but we call it campaign contributions.
Right. I think that we have the finest of politicians that money could buy. Let's go to Dan, who's calling us from Florida. Dan, do you have a question or comment?
I have a question and comment, Dr. Stan. Thanks for taking my call.
Let me just get our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But go right ahead, Dan.
You say, Dr. Stan, I've heard you repeat this on many occasions, as well as just a few minutes ago, that the intent is to impoverish the American people. But what you don't say often enough, and I've heard you say this on occasion, is that capital moves where it finds the best home. And because of the fact that we have this international money cabal or cartel, they go where the taxes are the lowest and they can get the cheapest labor and so forth. And I am quite sure that as of today, with our corporate tax rates, one of the highest in the world, that once most of the American population has been brought to their knees with the horrendous economic conditions that we're in, once they are willing to work for whatever the hell they can make, then you'll see all of the multinational corporations coming back when they lower the tax rates for them, but of course drastically reduce the social benefits that people were promised as they've been paying in the last 30 or 40 years. And it's just that you can never get ahead of these people.
Hey, Dan, you raise a great...
They control the game, and they don't just control it here. They control it on a global basis.
I think you're
Please
absolutely
correct me where you think I'm wrong.
No, I think
no,
you're absolutely right. Go ahead, Dick.
You know, you can even go back to the debate, you know, the midnight debate of the income tax in 1913. You know, the biggest lobby on that was the mineral industry. In fact, they created something called depletion allowances, which is really the coolest shell game of the entire deal. And it's out in the open, and nobody even knows it. Or they don't understand it, or they don't pay attention to it. But it's a 50% tax break in some industries. Because what they allow them to do is value the resource in the ground. Now, remember, it's a public resource. It's not their resource. They value the thing in the ground, and then as they deplete it, as they mine it or use it up, they get to write off up to 50% of their profits off against that depletion, that sort of fictitious loss, as if it were an apartment building, you know, deteriorating over 100 years and was being depreciated. But depletion allowances give these companies actually a 50% discount on the corporate tax rates because of depletion allowances that are built into their whole formula. And that's something people don't recognize. And again, these are national resources, and so I don't even think they should get a depletion allowance in the 21st century because it's not their resources they're depleting, it's ours. You know, we're the ones losing it forever once it's gone because you can't put, you know, another ton of copper in the ground once it's extracted, you know, as an example.
Dr. Stan?
Yes, go ahead.
If these people are in control, and they're in control whether a society is what they call communist, which is meaningless, or socialist, which is meaningless, or capitalistic, which is meaningless, if they're basically in control of whatever is going on behind the scenes, regardless of what you might call the system in a particular country, but they have bought and paid for the people making the big decisions, and they bought and paid for the people enforcing them, and they control, I guess, the military or the police or whatever it is to keep people in line. And this has been going on now for the last, I don't know, how many hundreds or thousands of years. Can you please tell me how it is that we're ever going to get out from under these people?
Well, I don't think we're ever on our own going to get out from underneath them. I believe without God's intervention, these people are going to crush this country and utilize our natural resources for their own advantage. But you see, their ultimate goal is to bring about a one world government. You've heard me say that many times. They also, of course, along with that, they want to destroy Christianity. And if we look at this from a logical point of view, everything you've said is absolutely right and logical. But behind this are powerful spiritual forces. And without God's intervention, we're going to lose. But let's hope that we can honor God and he will intervene. That's all we can hope for. I would say that perhaps if God is just, he's going to destroy this nation. But we're going to have to wait and see. And if you're looking for an easy solution, there is none. I need to believe what we need in America is a great revival. And if we had a great revival, as we had in the 1730s, as we had in the 1840s, I believe, of course, we could save America. Short of that, I think that soon America will simply be a remembrance of things past. But what I do, because I hope that that revival is coming. Does that answer your question, Dan?
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
God bless. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and go right ahead, Nick.
Yeah, you know, when you think about, I guess I always describe myself as a bit of a pathological optimist, only because I can't give up. You know, I think there's really too much in terms of possibility, and it starts with people getting the information. That's why I appreciate talk radio. I know it's been a lot of years we've worked together, and there is still an opportunity to do something. I think the first step is recognizing what's going on around us. And then using our spheres of influence. And they're different for everyone. You know, might be talking to your neighbor, your friends, people at work, or writing a letter to the editor. Do something. You know, just don't do nothing. And I think that's an informed public. You know, freedom of the press wasn't about publishing and saying anything you wanted. It was about the idea of keeping an informed electorate, people who would stay engaged in the public debate and try and hold other elected officials accountable. And when not accountable, you know, we had this idea of revolution, maybe that kind of revolution in the 21st century is one of a revolution of thinking rather than a revolution of guns. But, you know, the Second Amendment's there for all kinds of reasons. And I hope, I really do hope, that we don't see that as our economy continues under the pressure that it's in. And I'll tell you, it's not going to get better in the long run. I mean, we cannot sustain trillion-dollar spending at the levels that we've been sustaining it for very much longer. We really shouldn't have done it to begin with. But the fact is, we are pushing the country into a very, very dangerous position. And I think that is part of this conspiracy, if you will, of shifting public resources into private hands of corporations, which, you know, we finance these guys to stay alive and to continue to do their the business of shifting industry overseas. And the fact of the matter is, you know, we're all the ones paying for it, each one of us, one way or another. And when we look at that situation, what it's going to do to the country, if we don't start to develop a base within our country, we're going to be at the mercy of the very adversaries that we should have been paying a lot more attention to over the last couple of decades.
I think you're absolutely right. And basically, we have to understand, at least in part, how the tax structure has been set up. The tax structure has been set up to actually encourage corporations to move overseas. If you are an American corporation, why, of course, you produce in America, you have to pay a 35% corporate tax. If you are an American corporation and you move your bases overseas, your bases of production and manufacture overseas, your jobs, everything, why then you don't pay any American corporate tax and very little tax over there. This is specifically designed to encourage corporations to move offshore. The average American doesn't understand what's going on.
Right.
Nobody's going to tell them this. Right. The last thing they want is for people to understand this whole economic crisis is all engineered and created. If you really wanted to get American corporations to come home and be producing here, why would put tariffs back on? Or we would certainly have excise taxes, and we would certainly cut the taxes for American corporations and raise taxes for an American corporation that went overseas and was producing goods overseas. And if they simply wanted to say, we're no longer an American corporation, fine, say, then you can't bring your products back here into America, or we're going to double or triple your tariff. And at that point, jobs would begin flowing back into America.
Right.
And the other thing, of course, what we've got to do is certainly create the situation up in Alaska and other places where we can develop our natural resources, expose this whole environmental movement. Who funds it? The Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, the Pew Foundation. Go down the list of these foundations. They all tie into big corporations, and they're using the environmental problem, creating the environmental problem to destroy competition. Go right ahead, Nick.
Yeah, you know, that idea of offshoring that you mentioned just a few moments ago, you know, the Google, Apple, computers, a lot of the big multinational companies now have their intellectual property reside in places like Ireland, which has a 12.5% corporate tax rate. And what they've done is these companies have built up huge cash resources by transferring their profits to the licensing of the property rather than the construction sale of it, you know, where the real work is done. And as a consequence, they've built up these big piles of cash, and they're waiting for the U.S., because there's like $1 trillion held in outside the United States by these companies, and to repatriate the money, they're trying to convince the federal government, they're all lobbying for a tax holiday. Well, they'll let them bring it all back for 6% instead of the normal 35, just to get the money back in the country. And, it, you know, it'll probably happen in the course of some of this trade. You may never hear about it, but I'll bet you there'll be a tax holiday, get all that money back. So they first take it all out, and now they get to bring it back and do it at a discount. I mean, what a deal for the multinationals.
And, of course, the average individual doesn't understand. They don't see how this game is being played. And, of course, what happened, they did this 10 years or so ago. The money came back in at 5% tax. And what did they do with it? They used it to buy up the stock so that the CEO would make a lot more money with his stock.
Right, exactly right. It's just another shell game at all of our expense.
Well, we got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Go right ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it's just another shell game. You know, when you think about how resources are moved around, how the money moves around the planet, and who ends up paying the bill is you and me. And really, a transparent system, one that you could actually see into and see through, and a fair tax regime for everyone, not just the ultra-rich multinational corporations, but everyone. Would actually probably lower most people's taxes in the middle class, at least, and certainly force companies that normally pay nothing because of the loopholes involved. And, you know, if they just taxed wages at a flat rate and corporations' gross sales, you know, at a flat rate, forget any deductions, just their gross sales like a value added, just the same as they're doing value added when they take money out of your paycheck, set it across the board. It's really easy to calculate. You don't need to spend a third of your management resources on accounting and government compliance then, because any third grader could figure out your tax return. The fact is, you could free up a lot of intellectual resources to building companies instead of complying with regulations. You could do a lot of things by simplifying the system, dramatically simplifying the system, not in this incremental way that these leading candidates keep talking about. But it's taking a look at our resources, taking stock in America, looking at the systems we put in place to either get in the way or get out of the way if this country's ever going to get back on its feet. And I think that's where hold your politician's feet to the fire. Let them know what you think and get in their face a little bit and stay there, because it's the only chance we've got. Otherwise, this country is lost, and we just all got to keep trying. I'm not a fatalist. I'm an optimist, and maybe we can still make it.
Well, I think that the one thing they fear is the American people are going to wake up. And certainly the beauty of what we have is we do 5 hours of talk radio a day. We have 4 different networks. We reach, I believe, thousands and thousands of people who are reaching other people. And I think there is an awakening across America. Certainly we see this, we find certainly that an awful lot of people certainly are not buying aspartame products. Why not? Because they know something's wrong with them. More and more people, almost 20% of the population, doesn't want to take vaccines. Why? Because they've heard certainly people talking on talk radio. I think we have a means of reaching people. We just need to keep doing it, Nick. I appreciate so much your being with us and look forward to having you on to some of our other programs in the real near future.
Looking forward to it. Dr. Stanton, you have a wonderful day, and God bless you and your listening audience.
God bless you, too. Thanks very much, Nick. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That is Nick Begich, certainly one of our favorite guests, and we'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Nick Begich, and basically he's simply talking about how the people of great wealth, the big corporations, are exploiting the situation up suddenly in Alaska to the detriment of the American people, and it's time we began to take our country back. I believe in corporations, I believe in free enterprise, but we don't have free enterprise. We have these corporations that are paying off the politicians to give them special privileges and transferring money from one group to another group. Basically, that's what government's all about, is taking money from one group and financing another group. In this instance, they're taking money from the poor and they're giving it to the wealthy, and that's wrong. Now, suddenly to understand what's going on today, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to hear our talks on the dark secret, the forbidden secret. And suddenly you need to hear our talk on population control, the covert agenda. Population control, the covert agenda. We have literally dozens of DVDs. You can go up onto our internet site and look at them. You need to listen to these, and you'll get a great education listening to them. You can listen to our radio program, certainly, almost 24 hours a day at RadioLiberty.com, or certainly if you have a Ku-band satellite, why, you can listen to our programs. And certainly we hope that you'll listen to what we have, our guests, because I think that they are getting the information out, information you're not going to get elsewhere. And certainly our message is not only the fact that there's a conspiracy, but that there is a spiritual force behind this conspiracy. And unless you understand this is a spiritual battle, none of this really makes sense. Let me mention a new DVD we're carrying. It's called Behold a Pale Horse. Behold a Pale Horse is put out by a man and his wife. We had them as a guest the other day. And basically, they interview all the leading conservatives in this country, put together this excellent DVD. And it's not simply hearing people talk. They have a lot of enactments. But I will tell you that both my son and I and my wife watched this DVD on Saturday evening, and we all had tears in our eyes when it came to an end. A powerful 1 hour and 40 minute DVD, Behold a Pale Horse, about the loss of America. Now, we also have the DVD on certainly what's going on as far as the spraying is concerned, the chemtrails. We have, of course, the what in the world are they spraying, and now why in the world are we spraying. We also have an excellent DVD with Roslyn Peterson. It's simply called Geoengineering. It goes into the background of what they are spraying and how they're doing it. That's Geoengineering by Roslyn Peterson, another excellent DVD. On Aspartame by Betty Martini, because you see, they're poisoning our children. They know exactly what they're doing. Diet Coke, Diet Pepsi, over, according to Betty, some 14,000 items, many of them aimed at children, contain aspartame, which was developed as a biological warfare agent and is destroying the health of our children and our people. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. RadioLiberty.com. We want to remind you we're having an all-day seminar here in the north, in the North Shore of Monterey Bay on the 21st of October. And if you're going to come, let me suggest you get your reservations in now. You can get a decreased rate at the local hotel where the speakers are going to be staying. And that's October 21st. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Going to be a great program. And we ask you to bring your friends, tell them about Radio Liberty. Try to get them to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle, being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, but a spiritual battle for the souls of men. and the survival of Christian civilization. So please pray for our government and our leaders, but pray for Alex Jones and Joyce Riley and so did Noah Hutchings and John Loeffler. But please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection.